Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white open long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And speaking of books, I have two of my own books coming out this spring and summer. Princess Charming is a picture book, which debuts on April 19th, and Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, comes out on July 1st, and it is truly a labor of love. I hope you'll pre-order, order, and join me on tour as I go across the country. You can find out more at zibbyowens.com or bookendsmemoir.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at zibbyowens because I always post about everything. Enjoy the show. Evangeline Lilly is the author of The Squicker Wonkers, Act 2, The Demise of Lorna the Lazy. Evangeline is a passionate reader and writer who made her publishing debut in 2014 when she introduced The Squicker Wonkers to the world. Though better known for her portrayal of iconic characters in film and television, like her starring role in Lost, The Hurt Locker, Real Steel, The Hobbit, Ant-Man, Ant-Man and the Wasp, the Canadian actress spends all her downtime creating worlds of her own. She says, acting is my day job, books are my life. And you can listen to our past episode on this podcast as well when she talked about the first Squicker Wonkers book. Welcome back, Evangeline. I'm so excited you're here again on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your latest Squicker Wonkers edition, Lorna the Lazy, right?
Yes, oh, The Demise of Lorna the Lazy.
Yes, which I couldn't believe the ending. I mean, anyway, go ahead. I mean, I knew the premise.
You should believe the ending if you've read The Demise of Thelma the Spoiled, because you should be very readily prepared for the
end. You know how logically you know what's coming, but then when it happens, you're like, no. Anyway.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think that is exactly how children feel when they make bad choices. They kind of know what's coming, but then when my mom and dad actually come down on them and be like, you're grounded, they're like, what?
Right.
How did you not know you were going to be grounded? You knew exactly what you were doing the whole time. You did it intentionally. You did it against all of our rules. And you're surprised at how this ended?
It's so true. It's like you hold your breath and just wish. And then, yes, you have to go.
And of course, it never happens that way.
Yeah, very true. Okay, so we were just chatting. You came on this podcast. We were here in person together, what, 2+ years ago, and had this very emotional, amazing podcast where I was like crying. And I think about it all the time still. You were talking about, you know, when we falter and then people are there to like catch the balls and catch us as we're falling and the safety net. It was so great. And anyway, it's been so nice to keep in touch. And that was your first book in this whole series. So maybe people haven't listened to the whole series to know about the Squicker Wonkers. So give a little backstory on your whole children's book series and how that came to be and how here we are at number 2.
All right. Well, it's a very long saga, so I'll try to make it short because it started when I was 14 years old and I was a late bloomer when it came to reading. And I was so at 14, I was really into Dr. Seuss. And I think it's sort of a double, it's a two-sided thing. So one, I was a bit late to bloom into reading, but two, I think that there's always a rediscovery of Seuss when you get older, because as a kid, it's just cute and funny. And then there's some point in maturity where you reread a Seuss book and go, oh my God, there are some of the most profound life lessons ever in these little stories. And I think that was kind of happening to me a bit at 14. And I was inspired and I wanted to write my own stories like that. And so I wrote a story called The Squicker Wonkers and I read it to my mom and my mom was like, this is amazing. You should publish this. And I was like, you're my mom. You think everything I do is amazing. I'm not going to publish this. And she kept pestering me about it for, you know, just periodically, like over the years that passed after that, she would say, whatever happened to that little poem you wrote that was so good? And, you know, you should really try and publish that. And so cut to, I'm a full-blown adult. I have my first child. I'm filming The Hobbit. I've become, you know, an actress and my whole life is completely changed. And I'm working with Peter Jackson at a place called the Weta Workshop, where all of the creative stuff happens for his movies. All of the armor is made, all of the costumes are made, all of this like special effects that are actually real and physical are made and then applied to the film. And it's such an inspiring place to be. And everyone who works there is encouraged to have their own little pet projects that they work on. And kind of like Google, how they encourage you to be always doing something of your own on the side. And I was like, I want to be doing something of my own on the side. You know, I want to have my own little pet project. And so I brought, I think about 5 of my stories. I've always written stories. I've always been writing since I was really, really, really young. And I brought about 5 of my stories to the head of the workshop and said, do you know any illustrators who might be interested in partnering with me on any of these? And a young man by the name of Johnny Fraser Allen really responded. And he said, if I were to do any of these, I'd like to do the Squicker Wonkers because I have a very strong visual idea for this book. And he brought the book to life visually. And so it's a story about 10 vice-ridden marionette puppets who all cannot seem to get past their vices. There's Lorna the Lazy, there's Andy the Arrogant, Mama the Mean, Gillis the Gluttonous, there's all, you know, just a slew of them. And hopefully across the 10 characters, we touch on something that every child reading these books will be able to relate to in themselves. And they go on these journeys that ultimately are cautionary tales for modern day brats, a tradition that I think has been lost to our detriment. I think it's really healthy for kids to be told cautionary tales as well as redemptive stories. And I think the pendulum has really shifted nowadays to mostly redemptive stories. And there is redemption ultimately in the Squicker Wonkers, but first they have to eat their just desserts. And so the book, the series is going to be 20 books eventually. It's two series of 10 books each, one book for each character. And the first series is called the Demise series. So in each book, each character comes to an unfortunate demise.
Very dark. I love that, like, you at 14 were writing these incredibly dark fairy tales, like this whole twist on life. And I was sitting there like writing about how I felt when I had gained 10 pounds and like writing it for 17 magazine. And you're just like twisting Dr. Seuss. And it's like, I would love our 14-year-old selves to meet.
Totally. My mom used to, to this day, she always says to me, I don't understand how my very soft, sweet nature daughter writes such dark things. You know, she's like, I can't make sense of it. But I ask myself the same question because I actually don't like to watch dark things. I don't like to read dark things. So why do I write dark things? Like, what if that one comes out of me? And I think that if you are one of those people, so I'm a perfectionist. And so I'm one of these people who spends my whole life trying to get everything exactly right. And I think that there's no room in that for the wrong in me or the darkness in me or the shadow side of me. And I think that as a very young person, I realized that there was this really safe and constructive place that I could explore that stuff. And that was through art. And so that's where I channeled any of my pain or any of my darkness or any of my struggles with my own vices or my own things about myself that I wasn't so proud of. And that way I could keep the external me squeaky clean and, you know, not dive. Like I was never a big like partier or drug taker or like I was never the wild child rebel. I think that all comes out in my art.
I cut school once and it was like the most rebellious thing I ever did.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And I still like went back for the school play that night.
So where does your darkness come out? How does that get out of you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have that same, I mean, I don't know. Mine is more like coming out an anxious mess, you know, versus like, you know, there are different ways to be dark, I feel like.
Absolutely.
But with your perfectionism, I mean, it's funny when you're saying that because I'm thinking, well, even perfectionists are often open now about what lies just below the surface. Do you know what I mean? I feel like before, maybe pre-Instagram, pre-authenticity movement, essentially, you could just like be like, oh, I did all my homework and I got these good grades and I did this and I'm doing this and that and the other thing and I'm just going to keep going and I'll keep all my stuff to myself. And now, at least for me, and I know for you, like, okay, well, here I am like laying on the floor like a mess. I'm going to post this. I'm going to share this. I'm going to like come forward. Like, so tell me about your, you know, what makes you do that and share and be open and if it's really helped you.
Well, I have to say that's still something that I constantly grapple with as I'm a bit too old to be completely reinventing every single element of my being, I think, because I see the authenticity movement and I think it's beautiful. And I go, that's been in me all along. So I was always somebody who was writing memoirs and never publishing them. I would just write them and be like, I wouldn't care if everyone in the world knew about all this stuff. You know, this is fine for me because it feels like a point of connection. Mm-hmm. It feels like a point of compassion. It feels like a point of empathy. And so I always was like, yeah, we should. I never felt like I had to really hide the darkness. But then when I would look at what I actually manifested in my life and the things that I actually made public, I realized I kept a very tight lid on everything. So I wasn't ever publishing those memoir type things. And I was always very cagey in interviews. And I got a reputation in the sort of journalistic field and the magazines and whatnot as being somebody who wouldn't tell you anything about herself or her private life. Or, you know, I didn't want the world in that. It felt very sacred to me and like something where others didn't belong. And then as I watched the authenticity movement grow, I, of course, again, intellectually was like, this is where I belong. This is who I am. And this is what I want to do. And I dipped my toes in the water a number of times, and I continue to this day. And there is a certain point where I sort of reach a wall and I go, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like this is for everyone because this is for people who I trust. Yeah. And you can't trust everyone. And then I do think that there is a balance to be had. I was watching, forgive me for bringing it up, but I was watching some images of the Oscars red carpet.
You're allowed to bring up the Oscars. It's okay.
I know that they're like, it was like, people are really sick of hearing about the Oscars and the Will Smith thing. And, you know, but I just found myself realizing that after so many years of feeling like the Oscars were too stuffy, too pent up, too obsessed with like the class and the sort of mystique of it all. And I wanted to like let my hair down and be a little bit more crazy and stylish and wild and cool. And just being frustrated for like 18 years of my career. Watching that happen now, I kind of understand the value of what was happening before a lot better. You know, I'm like, there is some value to, there is a balance to be had. There is a balance to be had between like completely taking away any space for reserve and containment and just like everybody just sort of spewing all over everybody else all the time without any discernment.
Yep.
Versus the completely bottled up version of society where nobody's ever allowed to admit that they have a problem. No one's ever allowed to have a hair out of place. And I think that we hit that balance when I was in my like youth and, you know, young adult life. I think
you are so not old. You're, people are listening to this. They're going to think you're like 85 years old. Like, I'm too old for that. In my youth, I did this, you know. You're like younger than I am. This is crazy.
I feel very middle-aged right now, like extremely. I'm 42. And as soon as I turned 40, there was this part of me that was like, I am now in training to be an elder. I must fulfill my role as a mature adult. Like there are so many people at my age who are still trying to be 20, and I don't think they're doing anyone any favors in doing that. Like, I just feel like we need maturity, we need elders, and it's time for me to step up and be that.
I don't know. I still like call my dad. I'm like, do you think I should take this medicine? Do you know, like. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm 45 years old. Why am I calling my dad for his advice on like what medicine to take for COVID? Do you know what I mean? It's like ridiculous. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's an age where you're really, truly a grown up, but yeah, I will say age has performed some indignities, particularly like the reading glasses and like all the things that I'm just like, welcome to my 40s. You know, it's like, thanks.
I'm there as well. I have reading glasses as well now. But I love them. I think they're so cool.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love the juxtaposition that's already organically arisen in this discussion between you and I, because you recently wrote a children's book also, the amazing Princess Charming. And the juxtaposition between our two books could not be more.
I know. It's so funny. I have to send, I'll send you a copy after this.
I've read it, but I can't wait to actually hold it.
I will send it to you. I want a copy. I want a hard copy of yours too.
Yeah, I will send you one for sure. So you have this successful podcast career. You have this successful career as an author of these amazing anthologies. What made you decide you had to put your hat in the ring writing a children's book?
It didn't even happen like that. So as you know, I think, I don't know if you've been to one, but anyway, I have these author salons downstairs here in my house. And
I haven't been to one, but I am quite jealous. They sound awesome.
Anytime you're in town, you know, I'll just have one for you. We can have like a big celebratory party. One of the authors who attended, Karen Duquesne, said, a friend of mine is going to Penguin Random House with this new imprint. Have you ever considered doing a children's book? Because I could put you two in touch. And I was like, yes, thank you. Put me in touch. And I was like, yes, I've written many children's books, but I've only tried to sell one. And that was so many years ago and whatever. So I had lunch with this woman, Margaret Anastas, and she showed me a picture of a girl. It ended up not being this girl, but she said, here's a drawing of a character, Princess Charming. What would you do for the story? Like, do you want to take a stab at it? And I was like, sure. I love assignments. This is great. Feels like school. So like 2 minutes later, I was like, okay, like here's what I would do with the whole story. And she literally walked into my kitchen, grabbed a notepad and showed me how to write a children's book. Like how many pages? She broke it down with little lines. She's like, now you have to go take your story, write it and put it on each page. And then I did that like an hour later. And on the way to school pickup, I thought of like the ending and called her and she's like, that's great. And then that was really it. I had one meeting with her. her in her office, and I brought my laptop, and we hammered away at it. She's like, okay, I think you have enough to go on here. Why don't you just take that home? And I was like, let's just finish it. So we just finished it right there in her office, and now I have a second one coming out also about Princess Charming, and then it became this book. So it's just crazy. But the whole story is based on my daughter, my older daughter, who like would try everything when she was younger and just couldn't seem to find her thing, and it seemed like everyone else around her could. And I finally told her, you know what? Your thing is that you never give up. Like, seriously, like, you pursue it, you try everything, and that is your thing. So that's where the book came from.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Anyway, that was very long-winded, but that's how it came to be.
It wasn't long-winded at all. I'm still stuck on the fact that you were like, yay, I love assignments.
I do.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
You and I could not be more opposite. I have been approached on multiple fronts by either a publisher or, you know, another business saying, this is the book we want to write. Would you be interested in writing it? And as you know, writing is my first passion. It's all I want to do with my time. It's what I do for fun. It's what I've done for fun my whole life. And I'm like, ugh. It feels like an assignment. No, no, I don't want to do that, because for me, it has to just like pour out of me. It has to be inspiration. It has to like come out of the depths of my person. It has to come from, I can't be told like, write this. And I'm like, okay. You know, right? You're like, ooh, an assignment.
I know. I don't know what that says about me. So you're like, write an essay about an object that has meaning. I'm like, yes, great. I'll have it to you in an hour.
I'll tell you what it says about you. It says you'll always be very successful at this. Whereas I will always be beating my head against a wall. And like, essentially that wall will just be a team of marketers being like, we can't market this. Why won't you just write the other thing we asked you to write? Why won't you write your assignment?
Wait, you alluded to writing something about like workaholism and all that. Are you writing that, or it's just like in your head, or tell me about that?
So that's actually interesting. That's morphed. It keeps morphing. So I think that one was going to be very memoir-esque. And I've also alluded multiple times already in this conversation to those types of books that want to come out of me. And I think the struggle I have, and this is where, again, that your way of sort of working is always going to be so much more successful than mine, is I find myself constantly trying to catch up or keep up with how much I change and evolve all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'll be writing something like about 3 years ago, 2 years ago, for about 2 years, I was deep in the trenches of facing my own workaholism. And facing that down was very involved. And there were so many layers to that. There were physical layers where I was very, very sick. There were emotional layers where I was dealing with childhood trauma. And then there were like mental layers where I was trying to overcome mental habits that just were really deeply entrenched. And so I wanted to write about it. And so I start writing raw material, just like I said, pours out of me, you know, it just comes out and I just puke on paper and it all just comes out and it's raw and it's really authentic and it's really vulnerable.
Sounds amazing, by the way.
Well, here's the thing is that I think it could be if I then took that material and then the year after, like really honed it into a book. And what happens is the year after I move into like a new period of growth and evolution. And I'm like, oh, now what I'm dealing with is X, Y, and Z. And that starts to come out of me. I'm like, oh, and I just start writing that. So I have 40 years of, well, probably that's 35 years of reams of raw material that I have a box full of journals from when I was starting when I was 8 years old, like a huge box. I probably have 50 journals from the course of my life. I have a memoir that I wrote when I was like 20 that my older sister kept for me. I have like copious amounts of files on my computer. I have files, I mean, the amount of notes on my phone, you know, just random. And I like never seem to find the discipline or the time to just sit down and turn that into something, which is what I'm trying to do this year. So I'm going to channel some of your energy.
Wait, I'm going to stop. First of all, you should write this for Zibby Books. I started a publishing company. I don't even know if I told you that. We're doing.
You did. I told you.
You told me not to do it.
Yes, don't do that. I was like, you've got enough on your plate.
I didn't do it when I talked to you. You convinced me not to do it. And there were a lot of good reasons with that whole situation that I decided I wasn't ready. But then a year later, I went back to it. And now I have good partners and a great team. And it's really fun and it's great. And we have amazing books we've acquired. We've acquired like 16 books. Anyway, you should do it with, well, I won't, we can talk about this later, but I feel like you should do it with us because, you know, you need somebody to help you with the material, with like the sculpting of it, right? Like you're like, you know, you're making all this fabric and we just need to like, you know, turn it into a dress, right?
Yes. Yes. And that is definitely what I need on all fronts of my life. I need a Zibby Owens who can just like put the stitches on the edges of things because my edges are all frayed.
But your fabric is shimmering and beautiful and sparkly and like people can't get enough of it. So it doesn't matter what shape it's in, really.
So that's teamwork. That's where teamwork comes in. You know, different strengths. And I'm going to be really meta now, but I'm going to bring this back to the teamwork of like, because I actually think this is really important. This is something I like to get on a soapbox about, but the teamwork of molding and shaping little ones' minds through story how much they need stories like Princess Charming that are really showing them a world that is the hopeful world we want them to believe they can live in. Mm-hmm. They believe their parents can build for them. They believe that they can build for themselves. Like in order for a child to grow up and be aspirational about like really making the world a better place, they have to have at some point imagined what a better place could look like. And I think their stories really help them with that. And I'm like a very strong lover and believer in aspirational and idealistic storytelling. And then also we need our children to have a safe outlet where they can open the door to their shadow side and where like mom and dad might be able to sit down and be like, these are the sort of ugly bits of me that I'm not really comfortable with. What about you? Like, are there any parts of you that you're starting to feel like, especially around the ages of, I feel like 7, 8,
yes,
when their individuality starts to blossom, there's so much in that time of autonomy building where they step out in this like confident boldness of like, look at me, I'm going to be me, which is exciting and wonderful. But there's so many pitfalls on that road where they're going to fall on their face, and they're going to fall on their face because they've been like a total ninny, you know, they're just going to do things really badly and they're going to make mistakes. And to know what that means and how to learn from that, how to grow from that, how to apply that, how to talk about that, how to talk through that, like those are things that are equally as important. And for us to be able to walk in the Garden of Eden, but get to know the snake, do you know? Like, I feel like that is really important for kids.
I love that. That's amazing. I love that so much. And given that I have a 7 and an 8-year-old behind the store, both in that very individuation stage. My daughter the other day was like fighting me for something she wanted, and I was saying no. And she's like, I am an independent woman. And I was like, you are 8. Like, stop it. But yeah.
My son is 10, and he has been a fierce force of independence since birth. And so that stage was very painful. It was really difficult. It was like there was a nonstop head against wall, like, when will this kid just listen to what we have to do? And it is an interesting, very challenging balance for a parent, as a parent, to be like, I really want to raise a child who holds on to that autonomy, you know, who isn't sort of beat down into a certain shape and then held there and told, this is the only shape that's acceptable, be this. You know, I want him to find his shape.
Yeah.
But
you know, let's get to school on time. And,
you know, like, I don't want his shape to have really sharp points and he just scrapes everyone else around him with his shape. You know, like there are concerns. Like we have to mold, we have to shape, we have to guide, we have to mentor. Like these things come into conflict with our these desires of like, our children are born into a conditional world, but they're unconditional beings. And then we have to put these conditions on them. And it's like, I hate it.
It's exhausting. It's so exhausting. All of it.
So many times I find myself being like, I don't want to do this, actually. I've decided. I don't want to be a parent.
Yeah.
I just want to be the fun auntie. Like, you're amazing. You're so cool. Just be you. Like, I don't want to be the one who puts conditions on them.
Yeah, I'm like, what if we do have ice cream for breakfast? What will happen? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Wait, so in addition to your children's book, what projects are you really excited about now? What are you acting in? Like, what's your whole thing? What's coming up?
Okay. So actively, like what's sometimes I go straight to like the imaginary things that I'm working on. So I'll go to the actual. What are the actual things that I'm working on? So last year I shot Quantumania for Marvel, which is the next Ant-Man and the Wasp installment, and that should be coming out next in 2023. So I still have to do reshoots for that, and then there'll be a big press tour for that. It's like there's these sort of never-ending commitments with Marvel, which is beautiful because you never have job security as an actor. And when you do, you can actually relax between projects and That's sort of it. Follow your passions and just do really cool, interesting, artistic things, which is what I've been trying to do. So I'm obviously, as we're talking about, I'm in the midst of releasing The Demise of Lorna the Lazy, which is act 2 of the Demise series for the Squickerwonkers. And then I'm also, next week I'll be recording, I'm doing a voiceover project for a really cool Israeli animated film that is the first and only of its kind, where it's actually not traditional animation. It's classical paintings that have been filmed in a way to make it feel active, but they're actually static images. And it's the story of the destruction of the Second Temple. Wow. And so it's a very intense subject matter, and it's a story that is really speaking to a lot of the political and socioeconomic and social issues we have today, because the demise of the Second Temple in Israel, originally that story that was told, the reason why it fell was because of civil infighting amongst the Israeli people. And therefore it made it very easy for an outside force to come and just take it. which at that time was Rome. And currently Israel, of course, is dealing with so many factions within themselves, and they're fighting amongst themselves. So it was a film that was released already in Israel. The Israeli prime minister said, I think everyone in my cabinet should watch this film. It should be like mandatory watching for every university student in the country. Like, this is a really the most important film we could watch today. And it was so well received, they're going to make an English version. So I'm going to be voicing, the only female character, as usual. I don't know what this is about, but there is some trend in me that for some reason, every project, I'm like the only woman, 9 times out of 10 anyway. And then I'm also, it looks like I might be doing some theater in London early next year. We'll see. It's I won't say the name or the director or anything because we're still in the process of solidifying things, but it feels like it's like 99.9% sure that I will be doing that, which I'm very, very excited about, because there's nothing this frayed-edged artist loves more than being in a room electric with other human beings. Like, I don't actually like acting for a camera. I like acting with other people, like having people in the room and feeling their energy and feeding off of their energy. So it'll be the first time I've done that professionally, and I'm very, very excited about that.
That is so cool.
Very cool. And then the imaginary stuff that I think I'm working on is I'm working on writing a Bible for a TV show that I want to create.
Amazing.
Which would be very kind of a big world building thing, much more in line with the kinds of acting projects I've done in my career. And there is a memoir. There is a story that I am about to start working on, maybe shaping with this wonderful agent who I found, who has said, let me help you put the edges on your fabric.
Oh, good. Well, there you go. Perfect.
Yeah. Yes. So hopefully that'll happen. We'll see. It's always a challenge, but I've discovered a new habit. You might have done the same thing. I'm not sure. I've heard a lot of female authors who have done this, and they've inspired me. In order to really get any decent writing done as a mother of 2 children and a working mother who has like a day job outside of writing, I generally get up at like 3 or 4 in the morning these days. And I just write for like 2 hours in the morning before the kids get up. And then I actually get writing done. Do you know, that has become, and I've heard that from other authors, which in the end was something I took to heart and was like, okay, maybe that's what I need to do. Not for the inspired stuff that can pour out of me at any time, but for that really like discipline, get it into a shape that I can sell, that's going to take some serious concentration. So
yeah, there's no hope when they're all running around. It's
no, I don't know how
quiet and patient. Well, they go to school. I mean, thank God. Yeah. Every day they're all in school. I'm like, wow. And actually, I'm literally, as we're talking, I'm quarantined in here because I have COVID, and I'm like, this is actually really efficient. You know, I'm like sitting at my desk. I do this all day anyway.
So are you sleeping in there?
No, my bedroom's right across the way. So,
oh my gosh.
Although you guys
have a pretty amazing house for quarantining. Not too shabby.
Yeah. I literally said to Kyle, who also had COVID, I was literally like, I would be okay staying in my apartment for the rest of my life. As long as like people kept coming in all the time, and I was like always with people and like learning from them and reading and like talking to people, and like I could do it. I could live here forever.
Totally. I think that's the personality type that becomes a writer, because I'm the same. When the lockdowns began in March of 2020, my whole family were like, you've been preparing for this moment your whole life.
Yeah.
Like, I am such a recluse. I am such a recluse that I was like, oh, do you mean that my husband and kids have to stay home with me now? I just like my dream come true.
Oh my gosh. Well, Evangeline,
tell me before we jump off, because I have been always, I think I'm dying to know, do you put colored covers on your books?
Are my books. Those are just my books.
How did you end up with the perfect amount of yellow books and orange books and green books and blue books and purple books? How does that happen?
First of all, I have 8 bazillion books, and I get sent books now all the time. And I mean, I do like a podcast every single day of the year. So if I just took all those, and now I've been doing it for 4 years. So I took all the books out of this whole room, and it, as you know, it goes all the way around. I dumped them on the floor and I made piles. And that's how I figured out how many to put in there. And then all the overflow I put everywhere else.
God, so. It's my favorite room in your house. I want a library. I don't have a library and I want a library.
You go do that then.
I should turn my meditation room into a library.
Yeah. This is like a form of meditation for me.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, my meditation room has all my books in it because I feel quite meditative when I'm surrounded by books. It helps. It's sort of like really inspiring. Even just seeing spines of books that I know have guided me along my way or have inspired me or have touched me. It's like they're all in there with me.
Totally.
It's really good.
I know. I feel the same way. Yeah. All these characters sort of dancing in the shelves, you know, you just look and it inspires. Anyway, amazing. Well, thank you for doing this. I'm so excited. When is the official date that this book comes out? Does it have a date or is it out?
It's out.
It came out
on March 15th officially.
Amazing. I'm so excited for you.
You can get it at thesquakerwonkers.com. That is the exclusive place it's being released. I'm a self-published, you know, I have my own publishing house also, but we only publish the Squicker Wonkers. Maybe eventually we'll publish more, but that's all we do right now. And so squickerwonkers.com on Instagram, it's at the Squicker Wonkers. And if you want to know when the next book comes out, because as I said, it's a series of 20 and we're only on book 3, then you can sign up to the Squicker Club at thesquickerwonkers.com. And I send you emails when a new book's coming out and you'll get like, without any obligation or money paid, you get like free promotions, you get sales that other people don't get, you get like personalized books when other people just get a signed book. And it's a straight up perk club. That's it. There's nothing else.
I'm signing up so I don't miss the next release accidentally. Awesome.
All right. Good luck with Princess Charming. When does it come out?
It came out Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how does your daughter who you wrote it about, what does she think of it?
She's so proud. She's so excited. Yeah.
How old is she now?
She's almost 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So. And is she still Princess Charming?
She is.
It's still the same.
Well,
she'll be like her mom. She'll be very successful then.
We'll see.
having raw skill and raw talent is overrated. You have to have the discipline and the hard work to see it through.
That's true. Both is a plus.
All right. It's so good to see you again.
So great to see you. Thank you for doing this.
You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, @withZibbyandTracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Enjoy the show.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.